Mormon Matters Podcast is a production of the Open Stories Foundation and is seeking to build financial support separate from Mormon Stories Podcast. All donations to Mormon Matters are fully tax deductible and go directly towards keeping the podcast alive and towards building a community of support for Mormons like you. To support the podcast or to join the community, please become a monthly subscriber today at mormonmatters.org.
All right, let's go dark. Derek, Darth Derek, you know, take us into, I mean, and again, all these things we've probably all thought through, but let's go ahead and dive through. What are some of the things that are really a crapshoot that could damage folks that come from a mission?
Oh. I don't have the energy.
Well, I'm happy to start. As I said earlier, it's everything that's great about Mormonism dialed up to number 11, but it's also, you know, all of the challenges of the Mormonism dialed up to 11. You have a system that I was interested to hear what you said, Derek, about not being scripted or strict. Certainly things have changed since I served, and we had those discussions at the time, and now you've got it's preach my gospel. Is that correct?
Yeah, preach my gospel.
Yeah. So I'm led to believe that things have changed a bit since I was there. But you've got a culture of 19, 20, 21 year olds on the male side that are given authority. And I've got kids that are about that age, and I remember what it was like to be that, and we weren't all that bright, and it can be a culture of, well, we used the term before, abuse and challenges in that way, and so you're dealing with a patriarchal culture that demands results. The work can be monotonous, and as we're trying to relate to people in a real world experience and experience these things together, we also have this incessant drive for numbers. And at least that's the way it was when I was there. You had to report those every night. We were always looking to set records, and it was all about the discussions, and it was all about the drive to continue to succeed. And it was always measured in discussions and baptisms. It wasn't measured in, what we, to be fair, how do you measure it? How are you influencing others' lives? How are you serving them? How are you, being Christ-like? It was all boiled down to the corporate mentality, and that was a real challenge, and it really burned you out quickly.
Yeah, and I completely agree, and I wonder why that is. When people talk about, I loved my mission, it was so wonderful and awesome, they don't give number reports. I guess I have heard people, say we had so many baptisms or whatever, something like that. But for the most part, when people are bearing their testimony on Sunday about the powerful experience of their mission was, they don't talk about that corporate side. They don't talk about that the drive for what can seem like something that is not related to spirituality, but is instead, associated with, I guess, the honors of men or whatever. That was kind of the term we used on my mission. But it's interesting that culture persists, even though that doesn't seem to be the thing that people value the most from their missions, if you look at how people talk about their missions afterward as a clue there.
What I heard from, again, I served for two transfers in Georgia, so from each of my mission presidents, who I both very much enjoyed and respected and was grateful to serve with them, was this super emphasis on, it's not about the numbers, but what are your numbers? So I think that I'm grateful that there's that aspect of, like, at least our rhetoric has changed, maybe. I didn't mm-hmm. serve a mission mm-hmm. 20 years ago, but it ultimately, when it's like when you put those numbers in front of a human, there's always gonna be that, like, Even just kids with, like, I have 3 Starbursts, you have 2. Like, I am therefore better. It's just so innate in each of us.
Yeah.
Good. Okay. Losing the forest for the trees, or there is no way to measure quote unquote spiritual growth or, hard work except in these quantifiable ways, and we can miss what the point is. So absolutely,
that
can be damaging.
And with that comes, I think, a lot of damage, not just to the missionaries who will get very caught up in that and sort of lose sight, but also a lot of damage for the people that are being taught, because there is a lot of, it's just manipulation being passed down the line. Starts up high and it goes down and down and funnels to the poor investigators, and you're just, come on, just come to church. And so many of those people shouldn't even be investigators in the first place, because they're not those people that are looking for it. There's just, it's ruthless. And then, there are people who are happy to please, and sure, it's not a bad thing, and then are baptized, and baptism's holy. It is a huge deal. And the fact that that can happen without commitment, I think, is perpetuated because of numbers, and that can cause a lot of damage.
Yeah, you have missionaries that have to meet this month's goal, and they're pushing. Yeah.
Yeah, and they're told they're not righteous or faithful enough, that it's a lack of faith on their part, that they don't reach those goals.
Oh, that's insidious. I mean, those are insidious teachings. I mean, it's really hard.
Completely prevalent. And I mean, I got it from 70s, members of the 70 that would come and tour. And then I was a zone leader, and I was a district leader, and that was just what we were taught to tell. And so that's what I refer to by manipulation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let me offer a sort of ray of hope. I like the darkness. We're going to continue more darkness, but I want to shine one thing in here through. I feel
me to walk in the light, or what was it? I was going to sing the primary song in reverse there. Sorry.
Go make it feel bad. Make it feel bad.
I feel like the one great antidote to that sort of teaching is to have something, is to have another reason for why you're doing the work that you're doing. And I think for me, because I had really consciously realized the problems of that sort of mentality, of the numbers focused mentality, before I went on a mission, and I went kind of with my eyes open there, I could see a leader saying that, and I could respond. I didn't feel like I was necessarily obligated
you protected yourself from it. Yeah.
Right. And I think there is a certain possibility for inoculation. If you teach people that will happen, and kind of what they can expect, then I think there is a way that you can combat that. And it's simply by saying, well, you're saying the spirituality comes from numbers. Well, I'm saying it comes from the atonement. And this is my personal experience with that. And if you have that experience there, I think you can constructively refute those ideas as they come in.
But their arguments are so good. They're not that basic. Not the ones I faced.
Yeah.
They were extremely smart. And you're you leave the office or the meeting being like, wait, what? What just happened? You're like nodded the whole way through, and then you leave, you're like, wait a minute. I think I know what just happened, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think I benefited growing up in my family with a healthy distrust of authority. And so my experience on my mission as a leader was largely shielding those that I was leading from that. I would be on the phone each night, getting beat. I'd get beat up. But I really took it seriously to try not to do that. And,
you'd get beat up by those above you because
my district wasn't performing, and then it was we go about our business and on with the next day, but it wears on you a great deal.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. I may have lucked out in that my mission president was a nephew of Marion D. Hanks, who, you know, his whole career as a general authority was trying to reorganize missionary work towards service. And, you know, in other words, if you show up and if you serve others and you love others, conversions follow, you know, so he was not very numbers oriented, and I don't know how much flack he got, but it was neat. One of the things that we actually did, we instituted for a while there, I can't remember if it eventually faded, but we just sort of, you know, there was that experience of, okay, you're asking for my numbers and they may not look great, but he said we invented this thing called the discipleship rating, that basically it was your chance to declare to your zone leader, your district leader, whoever was calling you, you know, on a scale of 1 to 5, if you felt like you really were trying to be a disciple of Christ that day or that week or whatever it is. And the rhetoric was, this is the only number we care about. You know, so it was sort of your way of saying, hey, my numbers are down, but I was really a disciple of Christ, and they were never supposed to jump on your case for the other. So that was kind of neat.
Interesting. That's cool.
Yeah. So okay, so definitely the number stuff, and whatever we've just said there about being there's an inoculation stuff there, we'll carry that into a conversation as we get to, as we talk about, you know, would we want our children to go on missions and stuff. So
yeah.
So we'll deal with ways to prepare them if we're in that mode. What other are the big dangers that you guys see?
You know, one, we talked about the value of having this time of focus where you're dedicated to the church for that time. You're not, you know, it's a sexless time. It's a time with just nothing, just no movies, none of your normal life. And we talked about the value of that, but I think there's also a danger to that where, you know, you can learn how to be, you know, very focused and committed if you only have one thing in your life that you're focusing on, like on your mission. But when else in your life are you going to have just one thing that you're focusing on? So I wonder how, I guess, I don't know, realistic it is I think that might be one of the reasons why there tends to be a fall sometimes, a kind of really high on the mission and then a really low afterward as they try to piece their lives back together.
Yeah. I think also mental health is something that can be sacrificed, and physical health. The two often go hand in hand. But I was grateful for the ensign for, I saw it right after I got off my mission. So it was like a year ago, roughly last summer. Though granted, it could be like 4 years old because it was just sitting in my house, you know, but I think it was one of the more recent ones that it did pray. It did talk about making sure your son or daughter is treated before going on a mission. If there's any potential for an emotional disorder or a mental disorder, and because it will compound it. And so I was really grateful for that. But I really saw a lot of sisters fall apart mentally. I saw a lot of psyches experience trauma. I actually came home with post-traumatic stress disorder because of the mission. And so I had to distance myself from Temple Square for a long time. I couldn't really physically go back. And I would sort of have nightmares about being called up and being like, ah, you know, whatever. I don't know. Potential things I had done wrong. And so I think that just more tribute to the psyche of the missionaries would be a positive thing.
Thank you. So what's next? What else in the dark area that we ought to at least, you know, be fully cognizant of? These are possibilities for kind of messing up your life.
Okay, I think one that is very difficult is there are ample opportunities on a mission to compromise one's integrity.
Amen.
There's a strong social pressure to know certain things, to have testimony of certain things, to teach a certain way. And like I said, you can combat that. Maybe the antidote is to have your own strong convictions coming in. But my worry is that for people that may, you know, still be in a place where they wouldn't call their spiritual journey, you know, comfortable in any way, and they're still really, they don't know these things, I worry about those that decide to just fake it till they make it, and say, well, I'm supposed to, I, I'll I'll receive my testimony and the bearing of it, so I'll say something that I don't actually believe in hopes that it will that I'll believe it afterward. And that is manipulation. That's self-manipulation. That's just self-delusion, and it's not what God wants, in my opinion. And so I think we have to be really careful when we approach the subject of missionary work. If you go on a mission, you know, don't say things that you don't believe. And I've told this to my missionaries before. You know, I would say you're in a place where you can learn things. You know, you can gain your testimony. You can pray and you can find real answers to things. So don't give up. Don't just say things that you don't believe and hope that you'll believe it later. I've seen people I feel like I've seen cases where people were very successful on their mission, but after it was sort of at the cost of their personal integrity in this way that I've described, and they stopped going, you know, to church altogether, and not necessarily that's a horrible thing, but I think it is a horrible thing to compromise your own integrity like that. I think that has real spiritual and probably emotional ramifications.
That is an interesting angle. I have not really ever thought of that. And I guess I don't know what level of pressure would be to conform that way. But is it hard to forgive yourself of something like that? Let's say that, you know, you're reflecting on it years later. And you're saying, man, that was a compromise of my integrity. But does it feel that way when you're doing it? Is it something that really is lifelong damaging?
Well, I mean, I think that's what I've largely been referring to.
Okay.
Is that I felt manipulated, and so the product of that was bearing testimony and representing things that I didn't always believe.
Because the script called for a particular testimony.
Yeah, and because I was in a mission of just really smart, talented women, and they were just, I mean, I went in so strong with such an independent streak, and still I found myself like just really, I lost my integrity often. And I do, it does, I think that's where a lot of my bitterness comes from. Is that feeling of inner disgust, and then its projection onto those who I see as having a hand in it. Though, again, I go back to, it was done with really, like, they believed it as they told me, and it came from their heart of hearts. It just wasn't the wisest thing at the time.
Thank you. Great angle. Thank you.
You know, I don't know. Thinking, going back to the question of how should people think of as they reflect it, I'm not, you know, I think we can grow. We can look back on our past. And I guess I don't really feel like I have the life experience, I guess, to really answer that question. So maybe I shouldn't even go there. But it seems like, you know, I'm more interested in getting the people that haven't yet done that, haven't yet gone on a mission, and say, hey, keep this in mind, and maybe you can avoid some of these difficulties. I think if you're realizing it later on, just, hey, you know, repent and come back.
Yeah, and that, I guess that's my initial
Thank
thing,
you.
Too.
Thank you, Derek, for that invitation.
All right. Awesome.
Let's see what I can do.
Yeah, but no, thanks for laying that out, and, you know, not being fully persuaded to TK, so that's great. In the interest of time, what else are the real, you know, let's move quickly. Are there any others that people, you know, who've heard the horror stories might not think about, or that you think that deserve reflection? Because I really want to move next into the area that you kind of keep teasing, Derek, of, you know, being prepared, inoculation, and things like that, as we start to imagine, you know, our children going on missions or whatnot. But is there anything else in that real negative area that we should for sure wrestle with?
Just make sure people sleep. The whole, like, if you sleep in, you are wicked thing. That's one of my top three regrets, because, I mean, I think that's essentially why I am debilitatingly sick at this point, is I fought through those, you know, I was falling asleep, talking to people, standing up, but I would still get up at 30 and push through because that was the righteous thing to do, and my health really suffered and continues to.
That's not good to hear. Just a little anecdote. One of my best companions, we both developed independently the ability to hold our scriptures open while we were laying in our bed and sleeping.
And for personal study.
Yeah, and it was for study in the mornings. And it was only after about a few weeks that we realized we were both doing it, so that we just gave up the whole ruse. And we just,
that's funny.
But were you successful still in your mission, or did the Holy Ghost truly withdraw?
Oh, no, we were successful. We did fine.
Yeah. I'm sure you'd be more successful because your mind is working. I don't know.
No,
I'll stop my hearsay.
It is interesting how, you know, if you have an ease and a less of an uptightness about how this is supposed to go, that sometimes results are just so much better, you know?
Yeah.
So, definitely.
We want to move on, but one quick thing that happened this week at the MTC. I was preparing for my shift, and there was a missionary next to me that was on P-Day and emailing his family, and I noticed there was some stuff, I just kind of peeked over and noticed there was a kind of general email, and then at the bottom it said, you know, for my family only. And then his companion, after just a minute or two, got up and he looked at the kind of monitor. I don't know how much time that they're allowed to email every week, but it's only on P-Day and it's only for like 30 or 40 or something minutes. And so that his companion, or I assume he was his companion, said, "Elder, I think you're about time's up, right?" And he just kind of, you know, frantically trying to hurry. And then about 20 seconds later, he said, "You know, Elder, that's 20 seconds of not having the Holy Ghost that you're going to have." And then about 2 minutes later, he said, "Okay, that's 2 minutes in spirit prison, Elder." And I noticed it was very awkward. It was very awkward, and it was this very sort of passive aggressive thing that was taking place. And I worry about how missionaries can navigate that perfectionism, that, you know, obey all rules exactly. Again, I think it's missing the forest through the trees that can happen, and definitely can be a problem on missions.
Yeah, and certainly that can happen. My guess is the next companion will cure you of that, though. You know, generally, you know what I mean? Maybe a mission culture could be that, to where you're all, you know, rule stricklers or something. But I would think that. Yeah. But no, that's definitely there. It just cracks me up. That's one of my favorite memories now for smiling is, I, you know, how you sometimes go on splits, and so you're sleeping in another guy's bed while he's, you know, sleeping in yours back in your area and all that stuff. Well, this one guy, he had his rules posted right next to his bed, so it wasn't like one of his goals was obey every rule except for phone calls. So he writes it right out. It's so like, gave me a chance to, I was in the ZL actually, and so I talked to his companion, he goes, "Oh yeah,
pick that guy's poison.
He's on the phone every night calling people back home." And so, you know, I don't think I really, you know, read him the riot act or something, but it was so interesting to see that he was so blatantly saying, "That's the one rule I'm not going to follow here." So
that's funny.
Yeah, interesting. Well, you definitely, there are, you know, but you know, it's so good to be exposed to all the personality types. And there's so many things in life. I think even as I was on my mission, I'm going, you know, when I'm in my own wards, I want to run, you know, if I'm ever in a leadership position, I want to run ward councils this way. Yeah. Or I want to lead this way and not that way. And it's such a good exposure to, you know, the bare naked machine of the church, you know, when you get to peek in at all these different ways of doing things. So,
yeah, good point.
Anyway, fun. All right, I do want to spend some time now, because, Derek, you kept taking us into inoculation and preparing and things like that. And so let's just imagine, you two are real young and don't have kids. Rory has a son who's first year of college, so he's at that age where he might go. I have a 24-year-old son who chose not to go on a mission, and I've got an 18-year-old daughter who's, you know, if she were a 19-year-old boy, she'd be going on a mission, you know, type thing. So, you know, and I don't know that she would rule out going on a mission if she gets to be age 21. But, you know, we have to wrestle with this idea of, you know, we've changed post-mission. We're thinking about things in different ways. And so we'll ultimately get to the question of, would we go again? But if your child wanted to go, what would be your way of, well, first of all, would you be happier or sad? Does it make a difference? I know, Rory, you brought this up in pre-conversation, if it's a male or female child, mm-hmm. a son yeah. or a daughter. So I want to just talk about this issue of we as parents, potential parents of mission age, or what would you hope and dream for your child regarding them serving, and then any time within this, how would you prepare them? What wisdom would you give if it seems like they're determined to go?
Well, I guess
then
I should start.
You should go.
As we talked a little bit before, if any of my kids decided to go on a mission, I certainly would support them. You know, it's not something that I would be opposed to. However, before they left, or before they really submitted the papers, we'd have some serious conversations. I mean, we'd have some serious conversations about, you know, the realities of mission life and what would be expected of them. And my big concern would be generational. This is a generation, you know, my kids are in a generation that are growing up that are quite different than the generation that's leading the church. And there are social issues out there that are very prominent with Mormons in gay marriage and in, you know, the homosexuality debate and just general ways that we have tension with the world that I think, at least, let me speak specifically to my kids because that's what I know. They are much more like me than they are like a strict LDS person. So they would have a real issue with the culture and teaching and having to defend something that they probably do not believe. And there's that issue of integrity again. So that's something they would have to seriously consider before they go. For my sons, you know, there would be the issues of talking about, you know, keeping your head about you. You know, you're going to be in a patriarchal system. You're going to have advantages because you are a boy. Don't be stupid about that, you know. Keep some perspective and keep some humility and try and work that system in a way that doesn't perpetuate the negative aspects of that. Now, with my daughter, I think I would have a more serious conversation. I don't think I'd want my daughter to be involved in that. I really don't. I wouldn't want her subjected to some of the things that go on out there. Now, I don't know any TK, you know, I'm speaking as a father, and I have no experience of what you've experienced. But I do have experience as being a 19-year-old leader, leading older sisters by a few years, but they were much more mature, and especially the senior sisters. And I felt completely inadequate, and it just seemed wrong. And as I age, and as I have a daughter who's coming up to that age, it feels even more so. And, you know, it's just a culture that I would have a real issue with or a real concern about for my daughter to go out there on a mission. I think the boys, you know, certainly have a little bit of an advantage there because they're the beneficiaries of this system. It's just a matter of them not getting stupid about it.
And I think I would just respond to that saying, like, yeah, that's a potential, but ultimately the amount of time you spend feeling ruled over by a district leader, a zone leader, compared to, like, your actual time with investigators it's usually pretty minimal. And so if you can push through a couple, like, roll your eyes a bit. And I felt always as if, well, obviously at Temple Square, I mean, we have sister APs, so that's not an issue. But in the case of Georgia, I felt like there was a general deferment to me in an unofficial way because we were respected for mm-hmm. our age. But I don't know. I'm sure it varies.
Interesting. Derek? I kind of framed it in both ways. You know, go ahead and what would you inoculate, or what would the nature of your talk be? But I'd love to hear more on. I guess it's kind of hard to say because you're all gung ho. I mean, you're enjoying your mission. You know, you enjoyed your mission. You enjoy teaching with the missionary program right now. So I'm guessing you would say, yeah, I'd be all for them going. So let's go right into some more of what would you do to inoculate, or what would you, you know, suggest that they look for that would protect them.
Well, actually, let me go back a little bit and say, as much as I love my mission and my experience, I would want to make sure that it was their choice, and they really felt like that was something that they wanted to do and that they were prepared to do. I really, if there's one thing that I regret about the mandate, or I guess to go on a mission for men, it's that I don't know if this is actually from prophets or just from our culture, but I don't know that everyone's ready to go at 19. And so if I had a son or a daughter that wanted to go, you know, I would want to make sure that they were doing it for a reason that they felt comfortable with. I mean, I think that somebody that age is able to make their own experience and is able to have a good experience. But yeah, I would want to make sure that they were ready.
So 19, you know, if you were advising your son or daughter, or your son in this case, you would simply say, you know, I'm all for you serving if that's what you choose to do, but you could do this between your junior and senior year of college. You could do this after college. You know, was that what you're basically saying? I don't want you to feel like there's this magic moment at age 19 that you have to jump through the hoop for.
Yeah, and I guess there's hesitation there too, because the culture is so strong, and my heart also goes out to this ridiculous thing that we have going on here, where whenever people don't serve for whatever reason, at least at BYU, there's always that, you know, people just assume you go on a mission, so that's got to be difficult and awkward. I think there's a lot of complications that come from that whole thing, and I guess the bottom line for me is that I would want them to be ready. I'd want them to own their own Mormonism. I want them, in other words, I want them to feel like they're part of the fold on their terms, not just on my terms or what they think that their church leaders are saying to them. Because the reality is, I mean, maybe this is too meta, or maybe that's not the right word, but like the reality is we never know really what other people are saying. So even when church leaders are telling us things, we ultimately have to be the judge for ourselves and act for ourselves. So to sum up the way that I would frame my advice for missionaries is, I actually think that Preach My Gospel says it really well. So I have this quote here. It's just one of the activities that that it suggests missionaries do in their study time, and I think it's really valuable. And it's this. It says, when you say, "I know that blank is true," what do you mean? What other words can you use to convey your convictions? And I think that's a really insightful question. I think that you can plug that into to other situations, including going on a mission yourself. You know, when you say, son or daughter, that you want to go on a mission, what do you mean? Why do you want to do that? And then when it comes to the truth claims, kind of going back to what we were talking about before, the one true church, when people say that, what do we mean? What do we mean? And I think that if we just, that thought may be enough to plant the seed of spiritual progress and, you know, revelation and learning. And if they're on the track to be seeking knowledge humbly, then I think that they're going to have a good experience. So I just want them to be prepared to do that, so that they're not swept away by the mission culture or what they perceive their leaders are saying, or all these things. If they have their own conviction, then I think good things will come as a result of that.
Very cool. I have a good friend whose son is thinking of going on a mission, and this friend isn't supportive. And we probably should have brought this up in the negative section. And his major objection is that my son's going to be out there for 2 years hearing the message that me, his father, is somehow less than or whatever because of the choices that this person's made for the church. And so his whole thing is that this could drive a wedge between him and his son, because his son will have built up this momentum of thinking of his father, you know, as sort of a spiritual failure or whatever. And so he's not wanting that. But so I thinking of our particular audience here, Mormon Matters Podcast, Mormon Stories and stuff, there's a lot of folks that are, you know, in flux concerning their own testimony. What would you guys do would you confront your child ahead of time with your own journey? How open or with your out of the boxness or your, you know, I'm in the midst of turmoil, would you want to be with your child in order to like protect against what this friend is worried about?
I would say don't put them in a position where they can make up a simplified narrative of your complicated faith.
Ooh, I like it.
Yeah,
because
good.
The thing is, if you if you don't talk about your journey, if you don't talk about your experiences, and you allow them to go on a mission, and they're just like, well, my dad was offended, and so he stopped going to church, and well, I know he drinks, and so that must be why he doesn't go to church. Like, no, show them the difficulties, show them, and I feel like that can only help them. They're going to be teaching real people, and you're a real person, so yeah, I say go for it. Don't let them get away with simplified stories and narratives about your spirituality.
Show them, but also allow them to develop their own narrative and develop their, not narrative about you, but narrative for them from themselves. Because, you know, remember, we're, you know, you and me, Dan, we're 20 years down the road, and we were there once as well. And so you've got to allow the children as they grow and develop to have those experiences. Because, you know, for whatever it's worth, those mission experiences were foundational experiences. Now, what we've done with that foundation since then, you know, we've grown. We can't expect them to assume our current stance or our current belief, because they don't have that foundation to really branch off of. And so you've got to allow them some freedom to do that. Certainly guide them, certainly, you know, share those things that are important to you and be open with them. But also, ultimately, it's their decision, and ultimately it's something that you know, you have to support.
Yeah, there's a little Fowler stages of faith that you're kind of talking about there, and seriously, that age 19 to 21 is a time where it's important to be super grounded in your story, you know, in many ways, you know, sort of that that real conformist view of what the life and its purposes and things are about, and you don't want to you know, turn them into relativists, you know, or deconstructors at too early an age in their life, and so yeah, sometimes you may just have to
to be patient.
Put up with their judgment of you to some degree. Well, at the same time, I think the things that all of you have said about, I'd want them to go, you know, you could still communicate those reasons. I want this to be for your own reasons. I want you to, you know, articulate that. I want you this to be truly your choice. I want to prepare you for, you know, the synopsis of here were my best things on my mission, so they're at least alerted to it. But you have to let them have their journey, like you're saying, Rory.
Speaking... Err on the side of thinking that your son or daughter can handle it, though, because I think parents will always see their children as, you know, 10-year-olds that are not able to handle complex things, but try them, you know? Yeah.
But to validate what was somewhat spoken before is, I actually have a close friend who his brother served in Berlin, and he experienced, like, some really articulate anti-Mormons, this brother, and came home and taught his family, like, the ways of defending ourselves against anti-Mormons. And he was all of, like, what, 12 years old, I believe. And so from 12 years, like, starting at, it was such, like, a synthetic injection of trial into his spiritual journey that it warped it for a very long time. So yeah, we definitely have to respect that God is in control and he's guiding each individual. We don't want to suddenly shake them up just for the sake of shaking them up.
Yeah, good. Anything more on children advise, yay or nay?
Interesting that as we're recording this, there's an article out in Sports Illustrated this week. It's about a young man, a basketball player in Chicago. He's also LDS, and he is being touted as the best high school player since LeBron James. And so Sports Illustrated has quite a big article on him. And he's going to be faced with this decision as well. You know, after his freshman year of college, he's going to be faced with a decision on a mission or NBA. And they have a quote in there from Danny Ainge. And Danny Ainge, he did not serve a mission. He, right. You know, he played basketball. He played baseball. He's a very successful athlete as well as an executive in the sports. And he's a bishop now. And the article concluded with a quote from him as a bishop. And he said, you know, I think every young man should prepare to serve a mission. I don't think every young man should serve a mission.
Hmm.
Oh, I thought that was pretty wise.
Hmm.
Yeah. I like it. Thank
you. Yeah, nice.
I think every young woman should prepare to serve a mission, too.
Yes. I was just quoting.
No, I know.
All right, guys, you have a chance now. You know, take whatever perspective Eric or TK and Derek 2 years ago, 3 years ago, whatever it would be. Rory, you and I, 20-plus years. Here you are now with your current thoughts. Let's just assume that you would go again. How would your mission be different? What would you do to transform it according to whatever it is? Or can you not even see yourself? You know, I wouldn't want to send anybody in the direction of Mormonism. So I'll leave that as an option. But I'd rather have us go to, like, how would you serve today? What would be the messages to yourself with respect to all the complexities that are now in our brains that maybe weren't when we started?
Knowing what I know now, or how I see things now, if I were to serve a mission, I would focus on service. I would, we started doing service in my mission. We did several hours a week. I would do it almost exclusively. I think that's where we connected with people. We were shoulder to shoulder with people, and we were there with their lives. And I would take more time doing that. In fact, I think, you know, if our missionary program evolved, I would be much more behind it if it were more focused on service. If it was something that our young people had an opportunity to go out and build wells, build bridges, serve in underprivileged areas, and focus more on the aspects of Christianity and being Christ-like, of lifting one another's burdens, and then allowing the teaching of the gospel to be, you know, handled at the local level with the ward members that are going to be there in the future. One of my biggest regrets was having these great experiences with the people that I was teaching and then leaving the area. And I didn't do a good job of handing off those relationships, and that was not fair to those people. Mm-hmm. I think that missionary work, it's valuable for the missionaries. We certainly bring converts in, but we can do a much better job of retaining them, and we can do a much better job of building those relationships at the local level. And I think the teaching needs to be more happening, you know, happen more at the local level, and give our youth a chance to just be selfless and serve in capacities that might be more in line with Christ-like service, as opposed to trying to bring those numbers in.
Cool. Now, before I have Jarek and TK again, I'm going to push you on this, Rory, and you can reject this line of questioning.
Okay.
So that's great, and I think all of us would probably say, yes, yeah, service, tire meets the road of Christianity. There's a cognitive content that you're going to have to talk about Mormonism to some degree. When people, for whatever reason, they're attracted to your message, they want to change their life or something, could you with integrity testify about the goodness of Mormonism, the truthfulness of Mormon at any level, and be a person of integrity? You know, in other words, there'd be some level of expectation that you're going to claim that there's a prophet of God on the earth, that the Book of Mormon is scripture, etc. Could you manage that particular hurdle?
No. What I could testify to, though, are the teachings about Mormonism that lift you in the eternal progression, the concept of families and the importance of families, the fact that the this life is not some arbitrary litmus test to go to heaven or hell, that this is just one step on an eternal journey that we're all seeking to improve on. Those are the kinds of things that animate me within Mormonism. Those are the things I could testify to, and I would simply avoid the ones that I couldn't testify to.
Okay, so in other words, this would not be a reason for you not to go. You, in other words, if for whatever reason you felt like I have 2 years to do this again, you feel like you could spin it in a way that wouldn't damage your soul, and it could still bring converts into the church. It would still be a net positive both for your own life as well as for the world.
Hypothetically, yes. In reality, I haven't the energy. No way.
Yeah, I think a lot of us feel that way. So, okay, but good. I appreciate that. Thanks for going with me on the cognitive parts of it.
Sure.
TK, you kind of have already let us know that there's not a whole lot of the actual truth claims that bother you or that trouble you. In other words, you affirm most of them. You say certainly there are versions of God that you hear within Mormonism that don't resonate with you and things like that, but the basic stuff you're good with. So would you go again? what would you do differently? You know, how would you protect yourself better other than sleeping more and things?
Yeah. Well, then I'm done now. That was all.
That was the one.
No, I think that the thing that probably crosses my mind once a day, kind of strikes sorrow to my heart, is how many people that I forced to be taught that I was just, you know, why not? Da 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 da, you know, and just like, well, let's just meet, you know, and just like throw that all away and give people mm-hmm. greater access to their own agency to say, no, I'm okay. Or being able, admitting to reading between the lines, you know, we know when someone's not interested, but we just pretend, play ignorance, I think, hoping that they'll come along. And just, I think, just being more honest and upright about who I taught and how long I taught them for, how I spent my time and who I spent it with.
Terrific. Derek?
You know, it's a tricky question for me to answer, but I think I'm just sitting here thinking of what I could say. I think part of the reason is because I still kind of feel like I'm on a mission, you know, like I yeah. still show up at work every day and work with missionaries. And so I sort of like, I've had an evolution of sort of what parts of Mormonism I'm really thinking about and what parts of Mormonism I'm wrestling with. And as I've had those various wrestles, I feel like my teaching style and my sensitivity to certain missionaries has changed. Gosh, so it's hard to answer. Although I can say that, like TK, I think there are many of us that have had dreams since coming home that we're supposed to be back on a mission, and you wake up and you're like, oh my gosh, I'm so glad that I'm in college now. But I don't know. I loved my missionary experience, and I hope that other people can love theirs. But gosh, I just don't know. I can say this, I guess, is my final hurrah here, is that something that has reanimated my excitement about missionary work is something that I found in the Book of Mormon, 2 Nephi 29, not to get all Mormon-y on a Mormon.
He really is still on his mission.
Yep.
Yeah, and so it's this whole idea of like a Bible, we already have a Bible, and we don't need any more Bible. And it just, I didn't realize until in the last several months that can apply to Mormons, not just evangelical Christians who won't accept the Book of Mormon. In that we often think that we have all the truth, we have enough truth, but really the big call of that chapter that I see is let's gather the truth. You know, Mormonism is not complete until we have enough Baptists and enough Jewish people. We need, like, Mormonism is not just about the church based in Salt Lake City. It's sort of this seeking of truth, and we have all these tools for trying to find truth. And so I guess that has reanimated my involvement with missionary work, because I do believe that, you know, it's that the gospel has good things and can bring people peace. It can be a delicious fruit in a lot of ways. And so I say, let's share that if possible, you know, if we can, and not think that we have all of it, not think that we have the whole truth. And I don't know, I think if I was focusing on those sort of ideas, I think I could get excited to go on a mission again. But I am glad that that particular part of my life is closed.
Yeah. It's meant to be a period. It's meant to be that, you know, liminal time. You know, if you look at the ritual structure where, you know, you separate yourself from the regular world, you're in sort of a in-between state for a period of time, and then you reintegrate. But hopefully your reintegration back into the daily, day-to-day life is at a level that has been informed and enriched by your experience in this liminal threshold sort of world. And so everything about a mission, from your haircuts to how you dress to the fact that you don't call each other by your first names, you know, to the, you know, the structure of your life, that is an intense thing. But it isn't, you know, Victor Turner uses the term structure and anti-structure. We're not supposed to live in anti-structure all the time. We have to function in the world of structure. And so, yeah, there is a time and a place for mission. So I think we all recognize that. But I'm with all of you, it sounds like, in terms of, I think I could, you know, by focusing on the things about Mormonism that I love, that I value, if I kept it at the level of this is how it's blessed my life, and totally recognized, you know, that it's not for everybody. And even if I recognized that somebody was very likely to inhabit Mormonism at that more literal level than I did, you know, the more I hang around with a lot of literal Mormons, the more I've learned to love them, the more I see that they're still growing spiritually. You know, they have active prayer lives, you know, that when I take the time to really, spend time and hear their stories, I've really lost that, like, superiority that I might have because I've thought through the questions and they haven't, you know. So there's part of me that would just say, you know, hey, I recognize that there's a spirit here who they will love this culture and this, you know, community, and mm-hmm. I'd be happy to baptize them. If I recognized another potential college professor or something that, you know, was was probably deconstruction would happen in the first place, I would probably teach them differently, but, you know, I'd be able to share the reasons that I've remained Mormon, you know? And I actually have there's people that I actually am in active conversations with who may eventually join the church, and, you know, but they'll certainly do it with their eyes wide open, you know. So I think if I went on a mission again, I'd be able to pull that off too. So, you know, there was one other little thing about missions that I totally wish I had known, and that was how dang fun they are. Maybe TK, you didn't have the fun thing, but Derek and Rory, wasn't it just cool? You're away from home. You're with a bunch of guys. There was just those fun laughs, and just, you know, it wasn't all teaching. It wasn't all being formal. It wasn't always prayer. You know, it was playing dumb games with racquetballs.
Wait, is it? What do you guys do?
Rock soccer. Did you guys play that? But anyway, I just remember mission, not knowing how much fun I was going to have on a mission. So I was glad for that piece of it too.
Yeah, it's true. And you can sing. You can win Tony Awards if you sing about your experiences on a mission.
Oh, that's right.
Which I think should be the closing music for this episode.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know. Would I get in trouble if I threw that in there? Yeah.
Just everyone sing it to yourself.
Yeah, there you go. anyway, so much fun. But hey, thanks, you guys. I'm excited for this, and I know we didn't even come close to covering the complexity of the subject. So I am excited, listeners, to have you come and share your stories. If this has led you to rethink about your own mission, great. If you've been thinking about it already and you just want to share, I would love us to have a really – I can see this episode as being one of those that could lead to a really fun and interesting comment section. So I hope that listeners will take us up on that, and I hope that all of you will visit from time to time and weigh in if somebody responds specifically to you.
Yeah, definitely. Certainly. I would love to.
Anything else on your agendas or things that you wanted to bring up?
One thing that I would like to say, my final thought, that going back to Mackenzie, my girlfriend again, because I have to mention her every time I'm on the podcast, and last time it was all about single adults and all that. So she said something that I thought was interesting. She said social progress, if that is a goal, if we want progress on some of these more difficult issues or issues that seem to be dominated by a more conservative viewpoint, that is facilitated by reducing cultural inbreeding. So I think, if you're on the fence about going on a mission and you're worried about all the, you know, difficulties we've talked about today, but you feel like you could add some, you know, help and voice to the conversation, I do think that can be a value. Your mission might be a little more difficult, but who's to say what's more difficult, you know? But anyway, I thought that was a good point and wanted to throw that out there.
Amen.
Yeah, so you're saying by bringing converts in, that's one way of reducing the inbreeding, but it's also, if you're on the fence and yet you're on the progressive end of it, it's best for you to go because you're fighting against those cultural forces a little bit. Is that what you meant?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you can be a voice of reason in the face of immature homophobia or whatever there might be, you can really do a lot of good, you know, so.
Right. And, you know, and you mentioned something to me, and maybe you don't want to share it, but TK, I don't know if you know, Derek has met people who served with you and they think very highly of you in sort of the way you went about you know, influencing the culture of their mission, even though I know you still felt like it was running you half the summer.
Yeah, friends of mine will say, "Oh man, yeah, she was a real, she had a real strong voice," like something vague like that. But they a lot of respect for sure.
Interesting.
You're laughing, TK, but I know that he meant it was admiration for you.
Well, I will say one of the things I am proud of is that I got our mission president to get it so that at least one sister in every companionship is holding a Bible. So it was always a Book of Mormon, two Book of Mormons.
Oh,
and now
neat.
If you go, there's That's one cool. holding a Bible, one holding the Book of Mormon.
Awesome.
Cool. So I'll think about
line upon line, one change at a time.
Line
neat, as long as you don't do now, we bring them together, the stick of Joseph.
Yeah.
Oh.
You know, I'm sure that's please. Done. I'm sure. Yeah. But you know what?
There's some people, yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah. fun. Hey, I've loved the conversation, you guys. Thank you so much. Excited to listeners to hear your voices. When you do come to MormonMatters.org, if you would subscribe, it'd be so great. If you donate, it'd be wonderful. This is we're kind of lulling on the financial front and actually going down a little bit. So if you've been kind of thinking that you might want to kick in, know that this would be a wonderful time in my life to receive more money, even though I do this out of love, and I'll keep doing it even if it ends up being free. But if that's something that you're prompted to do, please do. Thanks so much on that.
Well, as we learned tonight, numbers are an important part of this whole thing.
That's right. Thanks, you guys, and good night.
Yeah, thank you.
It's been fun.
Good. Cue the music.
Thank you for joining us today on Mormon Matters Podcast. To discuss this podcast with others, please check us out at mormonmatters.org. To keep this podcast alive, or to join our support community, please consider a tax-deductible donation today at mormonmatters.org. Music for this podcast was brought to you by Brittany and Clayton Pixton. The Mormon Matters logo was generously provided by StudioCase.com. Thank you for listening.